The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Electric Ireland. Keep your energy costs under control with Ireland's leading business electricity provider.
Hello again, you're listening to The Business. You can contact us by text at 51551, phone 1850 715150, email thebusiness@rte.ie or tweet to @thebusinessRTE. Well, my next guest this morning is a man who took his business from the spare room to the boardroom in 1,000 days. That's according to the subheading of his book, and I have to be careful with the title here. It's called Get SH*T Done. Niall Harbison is a tech entrepreneur. In 2012, he sold Simply Zesty, a company he co-founded, for around €2 million. But not one for resting on his laurels, he now runs restaurant review site Love in Dublin, as well as the image library PR Slides. Niall, very welcome to the programme.
Cheers.
An interesting business career so far, but you started as a chef. How did that come about?
I did. I was actually terrible in school, so I couldn't concentrate. I think I had what you might call ADHD or something now. They probably have a fancy name on it, but I failed the same year 3 times. I couldn't concentrate. I was just horrendous. I was reading stuff and, you know, like trying to teach myself, but I just wasn't fit for formal education. So I got to 17 and my dad was at his wit's end. He was like, look, you have to do something. So he's like, why don't you learn a trade and be a chef. He must have seen me cooking or something. So I said, fine, I'll go and do that. So I went and trained to be a chef in Cahalborough Street in Dublin.
You ended up working for Conrad Gallagher.
The infamous Conrad Gallagher, yes. Which, we've heard the bad side of Conrad Gallagher in recent years, but when I went there, I was about 18. It was a Michelin star restaurant, Peacock Alley. He was just building an empire from 1 to 6 restaurants. So I was 18 and it was fascinating place to work.
Like, must have been frantic, was it?
It was. I walked in on the first day and I was like, look, I just want to work here. Can I just peel potatoes or do whatever it takes? And there was 30 men in a small kitchen running around with sharp knives. And so I learned more there in about 2 days than I did in 2 years in college. So,
and how did you get on with him?
Very good. He's charismatic, I would say, is the way of describing him. Look, his businesses didn't work out in the end, and I think he could have handled that better. But in terms of actual raw talent and cooking and being able to charm people, I've never really met anybody more charismatic.
How did you get his attention? Because you ended up being head chef at one of his restaurants at a very young age.
It did. So I think there's a story in the book where I was just talking about career progression, and I was down the back of the kitchen, and it's very hierarchical. I can't say that word. But you work your way to your top, you know, over years, maybe a decade, you'd get to head chef, whereas I just maybe had a cheeky sense of humour. And I remember one time, he was at the pass, which is the front of the restaurant, and I just gave him a nudge and I said, look, move over, you big fecker, will you? And sort of he warmed me then, and then I sort of, you know, took me under his wing and taught me. So I maybe bypassed a lot of the formal training by building a rapport with him.
Just standing up, I suppose, yeah, and getting noticed in a way. Tough remark. So. Sometime after that, you travelled abroad and landed a very interesting job as head chef to Paul Allen, the former Microsoft chief executive. What was that like? That was on his yacht, wasn't it?
It was. So it kind of, like, that sounds like it happened overnight, but I went and I did a snowboarding season in the French Alps. Then there was a couple Aussie guys said, look, you can go and work on these yachts down in the south of France. So I was like 23 or something like that. I was like, why not? And I started on a couple of small ones. And then an agency called and said, look, will you go and work on this very secret top yacht? And I went and worked for him. So he was worth, or still is worth, about 35 billion at the time.
What was the yacht like?
It's really hard to describe. So the best way I could give you lengths and stuff like that, but it's the length of a football pitch. So
so how many staff would have been working on
about
that?
60. So 3 chefs. You travel all over the world. It's online, but the boat costs about 500 million to build. He has 3 of them because you need 3, obviously, because one might be in the States while the other's down in Australia. So
it is tough, the problems you have to overcome.
Very tough.
And what was he like? Did you get his attention by having a rough remark with him or anything?
It's just communicated with him via email, actually, funnily enough. So he'd email down his menu. But no, he has hundreds and hundreds of staff. So absolutely no rapport there. It's more just working for him, to be honest.
But along the way, you kind of thought, if this guy can make all this money and have this yacht, I should start up a business of my own. So yeah, the entrepreneurial bit came out in you.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was always entrepreneurial, but then, yeah, I did sort of, I was in the kitchen on the yacht and I was, you know, surrounded by four walls, and the kitchen is glamorous, sounds glamorous, but it's not. It's sweaty, you're on your feet all day, you're getting seasick. And then I'm sort of walking outside and I'm looking at the yacht and I'm thinking, Jesus, there's, you know, I'm probably in the wrong business here. And at the same time, this was, I had a lot of spare time and the internet was just kicking off. So Facebook, YouTube, everything was just kicking off. So sort of a few different light bulbs were going off in my head at that stage.
You initially started with an online business. It was about merging food and social media, right?
Yeah, so I'm out on the yacht and I like all these things, the dots are being connected. So I was like, I actually made a little cooking video on the yacht, which was shot on a little crappy phone, and I uploaded it to YouTube and it got 100,000 views because there weren't any cooking videos on there. So I was like, I called my mates and I was like, look, I've got a bit of money saved because you can't spend any money when you're out at sea. Why don't we start a business? And we formed a company called iFoods.tv, which was instructional cooking videos, and we made about 400 of them.
Did you make any money?
No, it was a disaster. So we raised some money. We got lots of traction. We got about 1 million people visiting every month. We were loads of coverage and everybody was calling it the next big thing and revolutionary. And we forgot about the pretty crucial thing, which was making money. We actually made money in the first week. I think we were charging people about €30 subscription. And it was going great. About, you know, 50 people signed up. So we had €1,500, which is not bad for a startup in our first week. And then in our infinite wisdom, we just said, let's scrap that and let's go with advertising and get even bigger, you know. So that was pretty much the last money we made.
As a matter of interest, has anyone cracked that now? I mean, I presume if I went online, there are lots of clips and videos of cooking. Has anyone found a way of making money out of that?
A little, but it's. I think that's a bigger question for media in general, is, you know, like, how do you make money from content? It's a very, very tricky one. So there's some people making small amounts of money, and then there's others who are doing branded content. But I'd say generally the answer would be no.
Did you lose a lot of money on that business?
No, it was, I think I'd say I put in maybe 60 or 70 grand. So everything I had saved. But
that's a lot if it's everything.
It is, yeah. So, but harder still was friends and family. So, you know, like, good friends put money in. My dad put some money in.
Your next venture was Simply Zesty. Is that,
yeah,
right? That went well, very well.
It did. So we, like, I had the choice then when iFoods failed. And if you've ever had a business that failed, you have to look into yourself. It's a very tough time. It's incredibly tough. So I had the choice to go back to the yachts or start a new business. And I stupidly probably chose to start a new business. And we only had, I think, 7 or 8 grand between myself and the founder, which actually focused the mind really well because we didn't have that much money. And it was social media agency. We taught brands how to use Facebook and Twitter. And this is the early days, like 2008, when nobody was really on it. So that grew from my spare bedroom, which is the byline in the book, to eventually 55 people, and we sold it to UTV, and it was a great success story. So that was polar opposite to iFoods.
Love in Dublin is one of the things you're doing now, and it's an online, it's a blog, and it's about restaurants and it's about reviews. But you throw in a lot of bad language and you tend to have a go. Does that work, or does it bring out a lot of people to say, oh, I don't like this guy, he's annoying me, or is that part of the whole idea?
It started as an accident. Like, it was a blog after we sold Simply Zesty. I was at a bit of time off and I didn't know what to do. So it's like, I eat out, but I eat in the same places. So it's like, why don't I start a blog and I'll eat in a different place every day to force me to eat in different places? And I was like, look, there's loads of restaurant reviews who are way better than me. There's loads of people who have better food knowledge, better writing skills. I was just like, why don't I just write it like I speak? And I actually speak with a lot of swear words. I'm trying to hold them back here, which I'm doing pretty well at. But I wrote it down as I spoke. And honestly, it was just about telling things like it was. So it's got 400,000 people who visit it every month now, which is quite a lot. But I have at times maybe upset people.
But in the book, you talk about sort of bringing out the haters that can be out there online, and people that will really throw a bit of flack at you.
It's not that you bring them out. I think when you get to a certain scale that people do push back, and we all know that what you say to somebody in real life is people will say something completely different when they're behind a keyboard, and it can at times be very abusive and very full on. But I think you have to take it with a pinch of salt at sometimes and listen to the valid criticism. But then there, you've just got to realise that 5% of people who are telling you to hang yourself are probably...
You upset quite a few people not that long ago with some comments you made online about young guys in Dublin jumping off roofs to go swimming in the canals. It was fairly nasty stuff, and it got quite a strong reaction.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't written in a nasty tone, or it wasn't meant to be written in a nasty tone. The point that I was trying to get across was there's these restaurants around Dublin, and there's people jumping. Like, it stemmed from I was walking along the street and somebody spat at my feet, at the group of the young guys, and I turned around and he was like, look, what are you going to do about it? And that sort of attitude, and I'd been hearing.
But the language in what you wrote was quite abusive.
Yeah, and look, I got the language wrong, I think, and apologised for that straight away. So, like, it was completely wrong.
Is there a sense that if you're online and you're involved in something like Love in Dublin, that you need to be controversial deliberately, and that you don't really believe that stuff, or did you actually believe?
No,
that?
So I would have got into trouble for saying. Things about, you know, lots of beggars and drug addicts being on the streets of Dublin, and although the language was completely wrong, and I accept that, I still do think there's a fundamental problem there. I think, you know, if you're walking around Dublin city centre, it's not the same as other European city centres. So there's a problem there that needs to be addressed. And if people are talking about it, which they weren't before, that's great. If me taking the flak for the language is look, hands up, I shouldn't have said that, and it's wrong. But I'm glad that people are talking about it.
Well, are you far from the football field length yacht yourself now?
Million miles away from it yet. So
is the business making money?
So Love in Dublin we're growing into lots of different cities. That's where we're not at revenue stage yet with that. PR Slides is where I spend most of my time. That's making lots of money, and we're growing into the UK. So that's a huge potential business. Love in Dublin will go into lots of different cities and hopefully be a big media company.
Okay, and the best of luck with the book. It's called Get SH*T Done. Niall Harbison, thanks for joining us on the programme.